From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. As we talked about last hour, our connection goes back to the last six nights in this city. And in particular, when you look at Sunday, the situation that got the Washington Post's attention, USA Today, and so many others, the question of an elder shield at the front of the line of protesters between a protest movement and Rochester police. Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren helped organize that shield on Sunday and said that it would help diffuse some of the tension there. The mayor herself was not part of it, but she offered her thanks and appreciation for those who did go down to the protest movement. Now, after Sunday, we heard from many people who had been out the previous night, Saturday, when some of the most use of tear gassing and pepper balls that we've seen happened. And what we heard was a member of Rochester City Council, Mary Lupien, reaching out to say that she had tried to contact the mayor and the police chief on Saturday, saying that there was already a kind of elder shield, some from religious backgrounds, like Reverend Marlo Washington, the pastor at Seneca United Methodist Church, some from the nonviolence movement, like Kit Miller, the director of the Gandhi Institute, others from city government, like Mitch Gruber, city councilman, others from county government, like county legislator Rachel Barnhart, all marching together. And what Mary Lupien told us was that she reached out to city leadership and said, please make sure that no one is shooting, not just for us, not just for the elders, so to speak, but just know that there are people of all ages and all backgrounds and that we need to tone it down. Well, it didn't happen on Saturday. There were a lot of people who got hit and were seriously injured. And what we want to understand today is what's been happening for the last six nights, just not just on Sunday, when the mayor helped organize the One Elder Shield, but also what happens now that we know from Stanley Martin and others from the last hour that there will be continued demonstrations on a nightly basis here until this movement sees the change it wants. There will be hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the streets. What needs to happen to make sure that protesters can demonstrate peacefully? What are their expectations? What have they experienced already? After the conversation with Mary Lupien, and that's why we reached out to Kit Miller and Marlo Washington, and also wanted to bring in another voice from leadership in our community who has been there on the front lines as well. So let's welcome all of them now. Melanie Funches is a member of the Greater Rochester Black Agenda Group, among other titles in this community, and it's nice to have you back with us, Melanie. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you for having me.
Also the Director of Community Engagement at the Mental Health Association of Rochester. So listeners, you can imagine there's going to be a lot of talk this hour about understanding resources for mental health emergencies and what it needs to happen to make sure that people have the resources they need. Kit Miller is the Director of the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. Kit, thanks for making the time to share your experiences.
Thanks, Evan.
And Reverend Marlo Washington with us as well. Reverend, welcome back to the program. Thank you.
Good to be back. Thank you.
All right, so I want to ask all three of you if you could just characterize what you have experienced briefly, and I know we could probably spend the hour on just this alone, but what it has been like for you in the streets and seeing what's been going on in this community over the last six nights, and maybe compare that to what the community was trying to understand about the idea of an elder shield on Sunday, with a lot of people asking, why do we need an elder shield if city administration wants the police to tone it down? Why do you need to put someone out in front instead of being able to direct the police? Melanie Funches, I know you've had a lot to say about this already. I quoted you last hour, and I'll let you open with some remarks about all of these complex issues here. Go ahead.
Well, excuse my voice. I have been out every night. And the fact that I want to start to say that elders have been part of this movement since the beginning. The misnomer that there is this new eldership thing happening is, I want to put that out in the beginning to say that there has been elders part of this movement since the beginning. And I don't know whether Stanley and them shouted them out in the first hour, but I want to shout out Jim and Shirley Thompson in my words on them and their organizing efforts around the boomer barrier. And so I just want to put that out there. What has happened is, in each night, the response of RPD was progressively worse. On Friday night, I will speak Thursday night, people saw what was happening. We were small in number comparatively of the progressive nights. On Thursday night, there were tear gas, pepper bullets every five, and you could time them to about every 5 minutes, just coming in waves. And on Friday, when we were coming over the Court Street Bridge, we were 1,100 strong. They waited for us to get to the middle of the bridge. And I can tell you, I was in my car. I live streamed. People know they saw it. To where when we came up, the way we went, I was in my car because in case someone gets tired, they can get in the car. I can provide water. I had to turn my car perpendicular on the bridge to provide a shield for the babies. That was Friday night, Friday night. Saturday night on exchange is when they brought the dogs. Okay, I want people to understand and be clear. Each night, and let me tell you, every night it's been the same. We're chanting, we're singing. We are not being highly aggressive. You are taking people who are chanting and singing and marching, and their only armaments are umbrellas and potential shields made out of the circle sleds that you slide on the hill in the wintertime against a full paramilitary force. Make that make sense.
What do you make, Melanie, of the mayor's call on Sunday for an elder shield?
Okay, this is all right. For me, when you have the power to make the police stand down, why do we need an elder shield? Why do we need elders to protect us from us? In a community where we know that we have declared racism as a public health crisis, when we're in the midst of a global pandemic that we know that disproportionately affects African Americans and disproportionately affects the elderly, why would we call on primarily, when that call goes out, we as African Americans are a relational people. When the mayor makes that call, she's going to get black elders. She's going to get black seniors. And let me be clear, there's a difference between a senior and an elder, and that's a different conversation. But she's going to get black seniors. And because of the relationship, they're going to come out. If there's any way possible, they're going to come out because of the relationship. So what we're saying is we're taking people who have a double win, African-American and senior, and we're going to ask them to act as a human shield against us. Against our own police that we pay for? Again, make that make sense.
Is there anything, Melanie, that could convince you that maybe the mayor doesn't have control of this department? Maybe she was doing her best.
Then we have a much bigger problem.
I take that point.
Because it's one of two things. If she, and understand, I am not, this is not a slight at the mayor herself. This is about what's happening with RPD. My challenge is either if her or Chief Singletary cannot call off their dogs, and I mean that literally because they had dogs, like this is 1955 or it's 1964 in Rochester. If they cannot call off their dogs, if they don't have that control, then we have a much bigger problem to discuss.
Yeah,
but my thing is, why do we call on people who are our most vulnerable? And I give honor to my elders. I stand in honor of my elders. But I want them to be my elders 10 years from now. I want them to still be my elders. And that means they need them to stay in the house.
The last thing I'll ask you before I turn to the other guests, Melanie, is that on Sunday, the mayor, she hadn't made remarks all weekend, and then on Sunday during a news conference with the police chief said that in his view, the police had actually shown restraint compared to the protesters. And when the mayor was asked if she would continue to support the chief after he made those remarks, she said that yes, she thinks he's the right person for the job. That, to me, again, is a de facto endorsement of what we have seen Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I have not heard from the mayor or from City Hall, hey, we can't control the police. It's not up to us. So to me, that is a de facto endorsement from the mayor. I don't know how else to see it when she says she supports the police chief. He's the right man for this job. And the police chief says his department has acted with restraint. Do you see it differently?
Yes. So if you're telling me that you see that, now let me be crystal clear. On Saturday, when we came up Exchange, there were women with kids in strollers. There were primary, first, second, third, fourth grade kids in the march with us. For those kids to get hit with tear gas, rubber bullets, pepper ball, for that to be seen as restraint against kids who look like could be his children, against people who could be his brother, his sister, his mother. Then we got a problem. Houston, we have a problem.
Reverend Washington, can you describe your experience, particularly on Saturday? I mean, and to be clear here, we reached out to Reverend Washington and Kit Miller after we heard from member of City Council Mary Lupien about her experience marching with them Saturday evening and the contrast from Saturday to Sunday. What was your experience like on Saturday, Reverend?
Yes. I want to first and foremost say thank you for having me back on the show. And thank you, Melanie, for your leadership. It's just been dynamic. And awesome to sing with Kit and Jim and Shirley Thompson were the ones who really organized the community elders. It was not out of any political issue or for a press conference, none of that. It was just because of all what Melanie said. And it was out of the need to kind of be the front line between the protesters to allow them to have what they need to say and say it and do it, you know, in a way it's peaceful. Whatever that means, and go forward. So we went. We were happily with Kit Miller, who's one of the organizers. We were happily there to lead the line. We did. We got to the very front on Saturday night. We were there. The elders were in the very front, where the only thing that's between us and the police were the barricade. I said a few words to the police, like, can you please stand down? Just please stand down. You know, I did see an object of a water bottle or two thrown, but that does not mean that that's a precipitation to retaliate with rubber bullets and pepper spray and all that kind of stuff. I saw with my very eyes the police getting ready to do what they wanted to do. I am convinced they were to do one and one thing only. To disband and disperse the crowd. Didn't matter if there was a water thrown or whatever. Their job was to disband the crowd. And when I saw that the first thing thrown at the crowd was a tear gas, it was all planned. I saw the officer pull out the tear gas bottle, threw it in the crowd, and boy, that's all that mattered. And off it went. We were shot at. We were sprayed at. I lost my sight. I couldn't breathe. My son and his friend and girlfriend were behind me. They were protecting me, trying to get me out of the way, but my son got caught in it and started throwing up. And so I saw, when I kissy, that some folks got him and lifted him up and pushed him out to the side, running and try to throw water in his eyes. And I guess they said milk. I don't know. But I was trying to see. I couldn't breathe and all of that. I was crying. At that point, I cried. Because I was very upset and disappointed at what I see, the attack from the police so aggressive when they were only chanting. They were only protesting. There was nothing else. And my eyes were so irritated, but I refused to leave. I didn't want to leave. My son kept throwing up. And we just stayed there until we all kind of stabilized and try to figure out what to do next. And I lost my crowd, I lost Kid, lost everybody, you know, and like we were out there by ourselves. That's the way it kind of ended up. We all just lost each other and we couldn't go. And so you're correct. On that line was your community elders and leaders and anybody else we can gather, to, you know, just to be in that front to say, can we de-escalate? That's all. And that there was nothing behind us other than, and we can't control everybody, you know, but the only thing that was thrown, like I said, was a water bottle. But that is not a means nor a way to retaliate by way of having this Fort Knox kind of approach, the way that our city government has done so. So we saw the dogs, we saw the tanks, we saw the riot gears, we saw it all as if they're ready for a war. A war that I can't believe that does not that should not occur. And in the process of the dogs, I mean, I saw dogs. I couldn't believe, like Melanie said, and she's correct, dogs, like we're in 1964 or something like that. And I'm just like, are you for real? Now, the protesters, the ones who are the shield to shield the elders, were, and now mind you, this is their shield. Their shields is the lid of a garbage can. That's their shield. So the people that the Black Lives Matter organizers have organized as shields got the lid of a garbage can to help protect whomever, and particularly us, because we didn't come with nothing. We didn't have anything in our hands, just a heart of goodwill to say, can we de-escalate? Can you not do this? But they were prepared. I am very convinced we were on that front line. No one else was there. We were on that front line. We saw the aggression and what the police officers were attempting to do, because their one and sole mission was only to disband and disperse. That was all.
What do you make of the way the city has responded to this, Marlo?
Well, the city started it. So it's important to understand that if the city started this situation, then if I was a city leader, the issue for me was I needed to figure out a way for these individuals, which is thousands, to how to react to the fault that the city created, and allowing them to rightfully and constitutionally protest. There was no rioting. There's no destroying of property to that magnitude of any nature. And so we have to allow the people to mourn and allow the individuals to react in a way that will express their constitutional ideas. And so that's the only trade-off I believe that the city should have done, not this aggressive war plan that the city has done. So the city literally is prepared for war against its own people. And so I that's how I see it, Evans. That's how I see in terms of what the city's done. And the trap, like Melanie said, that was the night before. That's what convinced me that I got to come out. That's what totally got me. I didn't go out all six nights, but I've been three of the six. And so what motivated me was seeing how they were trapped on that bridge. And it's just not appropriate that this is the way of doing it. So there is a sense of loss of control. There is a sense that the city doesn't seem to have control on whatever reason, whatever way, whatever level, of its own police department at this point, because it is just using this aggressive tactic to get at and disband. Obviously, it's not working. And I think the city has to understand that the tactic used is not working to disperse and disband the crowd forever. It's not working. So then I think what needs to happen is another tactic or another city response to the city individuals and the region individuals in how to relate with the people who are angry and accepting that anger and allowing the people to mourn, because the people are mourning and they need to mourn.
Kit Miller, director of the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. What was your experience?
So much of what Melanie and Marlo, they've already spoken for me. I want to say that I was also, like Marlo, out Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And honestly, you know, I'm sheltering in place with my parents, who are both in their mid-80s and in very poor health. I'm their primary caregiver. So I try to be careful about what I do. But at my daily staff meeting Friday morning, I'm on Zoom, and I'm looking at my beautiful young colleagues bruises on their face from the night before, from, you know, and their eyes swollen from the effects of the pepper spray and the tear gas. And I thought, I can't stay home anymore. So, you know, so Friday night was, I just want to say, is exactly what what Melanie described and Marlo described in terms of, you know, a war zone, you know, essentially on that bridge. And what I really want people in the community to understand, and especially people in the white community, is the remarkable sense of care and community among the people that we are calling protesters is what I think our community ought to be standing for and applauding in every way. The remarkable care that's been shown in every way, from water and making sure people had snacks and urging people to register to vote, and all the ways in which people were taking care of one another, even as we were on Court Street, which was like a war zone Friday night, you know, like young people running up to me and saying, hey, put these goggles on, you know, make sure you protect your eyes. And, you know, someone else running up and making sure that, you know, they, when I like both Friday and Saturday night, like Marlo, I couldn't see and I couldn't breathe because of the effects of the pepper spray and everything that was in the air. And I was actually hit in the eye. And the care that I received, you know, and there was Melanie passing out sheet pizzas in the back of her car to keep all her sweeties fed while this is all was going on. I mean, the care that was being enacted while we were literally being attacked by the police. It was one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen human beings do for one another.
Mm. Yep.
And so I like, it's critical for me as like someone who got to be there. I want people in the community who weren't there, who are only hearing from the media, like what was happening among the protesters while they were in these dire circumstances was a thing of beauty for me.
And can I just say this, if I may?
Yeah.
What I want to make clear is that the elders already came out. They were already out a day before. They were already on the scene, thanks to Kit and Jim and Shirley Thompson, and cleared it with the Black Lives Matter organizers. And so we don't know how the mayor got a hand of that, and then make his assumption, assuming that she's organized it, when in fact they were already there, and that they were there by their own choosing, and that was because of the effect what we saw the night before on that bridge, and
yep.
So that needs to be really, really clear, very clear.
Listeners, if you want to call the program, we'll take some more of your feedback coming up here in a moment as we try to understand the reality. If you haven't been down there joining this movement in the last 6 nights, what it has been like, you can call the program, or if you have, certainly, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. And as Rochester has gained the attention of this country, and this city has, unfortunately through this tragedy, gained the attention of this country, there have been people in media from a lot of different parts of the political spectrum weighing in from afar, not being here, and accusing journalists at times of running propaganda for the movement. To that, I would just say, listening to Kit and Reverend Washington and Melanie Funchess, among so many others, describe a feeling of love, concern for others, solidarity, mission and passion. That
and
is
focus and discipline.
Focus and discipline. That's not propaganda. And I can tell you, on Wednesday afternoon, go back to Wednesday afternoon, 6 days ago, when the news first becomes public, and you see not only Free the People Rocks news conference with the Prude family, but then you see the mayor and the police chief responding. I received an email from a man who sends email regularly. We hear from people all across this community. He is an avowed white nationalist, and he just sent me an email saying the city's going to burn tonight. It's going to burn. This city will burn. And there's an assumption that people have, especially in some parts of media, but also in whether it's the suburbs or other parts of this country, that this is not a serious protest movement, that it's just about chaos. Well, the city hasn't burned in 6 nights, and there have been thousands of people who have been focused on a mission. That doesn't mean every moment has been exactly what whatever standards the national media would put on them has been. But it has not been a case of the city is just burning. And to the cynics who have written to us from afar, they don't. I'm not running interference for a protest movement or doing propaganda. But I can tell you, this is not chaos. This is not a riot. And it is frustrating as a member of the media to hear from those from afar making those kind of remarks. And there has been a lot of it. So that's one of the reasons we wanted to hear from the people who have been down there. And then after our only break of the hour, to come back and find out what they think needs to happen next, because there will be more nights of demonstrations. And this is a movement that has very specific goals now. Our guests, Melanie Funches, Kit Miller, Reverend Marlo Washington, sharing their experiences and what they now expect to happen on the future nights of this movement. That's coming up. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, members of Rochester City Council have called for their own investigation of who knew what and when regarding the death of Daniel Prude. And now they're meeting regularly with the mayor and the police chief with daily briefings to talk about what's happening now. Members of council have called for a de-escalation in the streets during nightly protests. We welcome members of City Council to talk about the path forward on Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. First phone call is from Rich in Rochester. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. How are you doing?
Well, again, we all wish the circumstances and, were different, my friend.
This is one of those calls that, as I made it, I didn't even know if I could make it through it. I'm listening to the calling of elders or ministers or whatever. And my question is this the only people that the mayor thinks has a sense of, has the level of humanity that's worth protecting? Is she saying that as the leader, civilian leader of a city who is automatically commander in chief of the police force, she had no say and no power on what happened the nights before? If she's saying that, number one, she's failed as a mayor. To see the two things, she failed as a mayor or she's lying to us. I'm not a binary person, but that's the only thing that I can see in here. Why do we need our elders to protect our people? Why do we need this? Why doesn't this mayor even begin to say this? This mayor said nothing for 3 days. Then all of a sudden she comes out like she's Martin Luther King's sister, which she was not. She showed no level of leadership. She showed no level of using her power. I just don't see how she thinks that she has any validity left as a mayor. When she tells, well, I want my elders to come out. She wants to make her citizens fodder for her police force. Is that what she's saying to us? I called in earlier this week and I had asked if we remember, why isn't the mayor and the police chief talking to the leaders of the demonstrations? I won't use the word protest or riots. These are demonstrations. Why didn't she talk to them then? She still hasn't talked to them, and she's acting like she's doing something magnanimous. I'm not sure she should. I don't know if we can force her to resign. Of course we can't. We can ask for that. But people need to show it in their votes. They need to show it. They need to show it at the polls. She's lost all my support, and I voted for her both times.
All right, Rich, I appreciate the phone call. Well, I mean, on the subject of what we've seen from city leadership, Melanie Funches, we have a movement, Free the People Rock, that is calling for the resignation of the police chief, the mayor, and the deputy mayor. Have you lost confidence? I mean, do you think that we are in a position where the current leadership can lead us forward out of this?
What the Greater Rochester Black Agenda Group is called for a truthful account. What we have demanded is to have a public under oath by an independent investigator, an investigation, and have the mayor, the police chief, and corporation council testify before city council. Because what we want to know what happened, how it happened, and who knew what when. Because for me, people just, for us to try to just out-damn spot a thing is not going to get us what we need, really. What we really need in this situation is to find out what happened, because you can't fix it. You can't, you know, Reverend Singleton says you can't know how to untie a knot until you, unless you know how the knot got tied, right? And we need to know how this knot got tied, and to make sure we know how to untie it and keep it untied. And so I want to know now what, how, where that leads us is something else. But I want, we called for that. We called for the Joint Commission on Healthcare, Accreditation of Healthcare, to look into the great, into the Rochester, University of Rochester Medical Center, and their interactions with Daniel Prude. Both of them, both the, when he was at in the psych emergency before, and when he came back after his interaction with police. We want the State Department of Health to look into AMR and into the EMTs who dealt with him. We want to know the truth of every part of this and to see what happened so that we can resolve the entire situation. Because until the entire truth comes out, we cannot do the systemic fixes that are necessary to move us to where we need to go.
Reverend Washington, are you confident that we've got the right leadership to move us forward out of this?
It's suspect. And to answer that gentleman who called just now, that's what's suspect to me, in that the leadership of the city is calling for elders to come and be these shields at the same time. You just shoot at them the night before and the night before that and others the night before that. So it's suspect of anything that particularly the mayor say and do right now. That's why my hope is that she doesn't really say anything anymore or do anything anymore other than trying to deal with unearthing the truth and not do any other initiative, because it will be suspect. And so for me, that is the problem with you're shooting at the people. Then you're going to create a human shield and say that these people are going to be in between the police and the protesters. Right there, you have lost control. Right there, you've lost control. You can't shoot at me one day and then protect me the next, and then say that you did that, and because then you're on both sides of the fence. And that type of leadership is not consistent. That type of leadership lies suspect in terms of being the kind of leader. We need a leader that is now going to take healing, because this stuff right here, it's going to take years to recover. It's going to take years to recover. And because this is going to take years to recover, we're going to need to answer the question after the investigations are done, who in fact can be the right leader to bring about the healing. I'm not even dealing with the idea of being a Democrat, Republican, or whatever like that. But at this moment, and moving forward, after the investigations come back and we understand who said what, when, and how, who knew what, when, and how, becomes the next question: who can lead us out of this and bring the kind of healing that this city, this area, this county is going to need in order to rebound and go back to, or not even back, but go to a higher height, a better height. So that, for me, becomes the issue at this point. And it started with Sunday. I was floored. I was so floored about that announcement. And I couldn't believe that you know, that the mayor could create an initiative and think that it comes from City Hall when it really didn't come from City Hall.
Kit Miller, are you confident that we've got leadership that can lead us forward in the direction of peace and change?
My hopes at this point really rest on City Council. And I very much hope that that group will work hard, put aside all its differences, do everything it needs to do in order to become the voice that the community can trust. My read of the Sunday emergence of the Elders Initiative that was mentioned in the press conference with the mayor was that there was that actually the city council had begun, you know, to self-organize with people in the community the day before as Marlo mentioned, and I think it was politically motivated to try to grab hold of that on Sunday myself. And that's just a guess. I have no direct reason for thinking that other than my guess. I want to say like two things about this. Like I really want to say that I feel, Melanie was speaking earlier about how relationally oriented, the axiology or the relation, the logic of the Black community. I think that our community right now is being held together by the strength of relationships. And that includes, the strength of love and that we have that, and that's broadly based with Myra Henry, is that even, Myra Brown, sorry, that even when, when something was created on Sunday that looked like it was going to be like a competition or a problem, that was immediately, by the strength of relationships, made into a collaboration. And that's the strength of relationships in this community. And it's led by people, like Melanie, who serve as leaders through Black Agenda Group and other things and all the other work. There's a lot of, strength of relationships. And I want to say one other thing, I think that there's a logic of law enforcement. And I wrote about this a couple of days ago that we see enacted in how Mr. Prude's death was, what happened when, as Mr. Prude laying on that street, on Jefferson Avenue, back in March, how it's been handled since, and how now the protests and marchers are being greeted, that there's a logic of law enforcement that really enshrines racialized fear. And I think that's what the logic of law enforcement does in this country, and so I think when people are calling for reform of the police, that's one of the reasons why I think we need to look seriously at how can you reform an organization that its very ethos, really at the heart of it, is fear of the other, especially of Black bodies. So that's a couple thoughts.
All right, let me get back some listener feedback. Brad in Rochester next. Go ahead, Brad.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
I just wanted to, thank you, Evan, for the fine job that you're doing. Just a shout out to all the journalists in Rochester. I've been following the Twitter feeds, and it's been really fine work reporting. I was there. I'm a city resident. I was there on Saturday night. I'm a white Republican conservative, and the last time I voted for a Democrat for president was 1980. But I was appalled. I am appalled at what is going on. Just as a spectator, when things happened Thursday, I was alarmed. I thought, well, wow, the police really stepped into it. To there, I'm sure they'll get a talking to and they'll get reined in. And then Friday, it was worse. And I said, well, of course, now leadership would have to step in. And then Saturday, it was like, I have to be there. And, I marched from Jefferson all the way to Exchange. And I fully expected that we would not have a conflict, that sanity would somehow have to, haven't you learned, from the lessons, and to be there and to see, the unrestrained, wide, violent response. I was, on Exchange Street. I stepped off to the left to the Broad Street Bridge. Canisters were going over my head, but just to see the unrestrained assault, I could not believe, what was happening or why anyone in leadership would think this was wise or would help, the cause. So I was just greatly disturbed. This is not just Democratic or liberal concerns. This is a concern for all of us.
Brad, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate you sharing your experience. And so let me ask our guests, and I'll ask all three of our guests just briefly here. Melanie Funches, we're going to see more demonstrations, and Free the People says until their demands are met, they're going to organize nightly demonstrations. What is your expectation for the police department and for city leadership in making sure that people can peaceably assemble, Melanie?
That they stand down. Full stop, period, end of sentence. And stand down means back up. Do what you did Saturday.
I mean Sunday.
Not Saturday. Do what you did Sunday. Ashley Gantt made a statement when we did another interview. It was on Sunday. It was like she said it felt like, you know how when you're a kid in school and an adult is doing you wrong and your mom shows up and then all of a sudden the adult changes their tune. That's how she felt. Like, we're adults, but now the adultier adults show up and now y'all changing your tune, right? We expect them to stand down. What happened Sunday is what they have been, at Free the People have been trying to do every night. They got there, they did a teach-in, there was some poetry, there was some singing. They stated their case. Let them state their case. But something I want to say before we run out of time is what people need to understand. Trauma has been committed upon our community. The ripples of trauma. We have children who have been traumatized. We teach children, Mr. Rogers says, look for the helper. And among those helpers are supposed to be police officers. We have taught children, our local police agency has taught children that if you're black and brown, these police officers will tear gas you. How are we as a community going to deal with a culturally responsive trauma response to what has happened? Not just what happened to Mr. Prude. That's a separate and apart thing that we have to discuss and come to reckoning with. But what are we going to do about the trauma response for what is happening over the last 6 months?
Reverend Washington, what is the expectation now going forward to make sure that assemblies can be peaceful?
Well, to continue to do what took place Sunday, it should have happened 6 days ago. You know, in that the city created this. Like I said, the city created this, but yet the city is trying to tame down the voices and oppress the oppressed. And so if the way to go about this is to let the oppressed be liberated, let the oppressed who's going through the trauma, as Melanie shared, address the trauma. And to address the trauma in an appropriate fashion is to do what they did yesterday and the night before. And it's to continue that path until something happens, until I can see if there was rioting. I could see if buildings are destroyed, and as you said before, you know, the city's going to be burned or something to that effect. Okay, I can understand that. But you're talking about people and individuals and young adults who was trying to protect themselves and others. They were even protecting the elders, you know, the other day with like I said, the lid of a trash can. That was their weapon. That was it. That was all. So if the other side has all of these weapons and the dogs and the tanks and the this and the that against these helpless individuals, it's creating more of the trauma. It's only creating more of hate and hurt. And so the only best approach that the city needs to do right now, de-escalate. Simply de-escalate. And wait for something to happen that might be out of the norm, then to properly respond. But not before, because that tactic is not working. That tactic is gone. And therefore, I think that, you know, the organizers have done a tremendous job to move the community in a way to voice their concerns and their opinions and to go ahead and do that in a peaceful manner or in a manner that doesn't create the havoc that other cynics would think, that they would have been created. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud. I'm proud in the sense that what we saw these last two nights was the kind of protest that should be, and the next step with this is to honor the protests, honor their demands, look at some of the things that they're saying, and begin to create new policies around that fast and in a hurry.
Kit Miller, I know you agree with that. Let me read. Edith in Rochester says, maybe the mayor called for the elders to try to calm down the young people. Edith is indicating maybe it's the young people who are agitating and causing unrest. She thinks the mayor is the right person to lead the city, and indicating that Free the People Rock doesn't speak for for all of Black Rochester. I don't think any one person speaks for all of Black Rochester. And Edith, I appreciate the note. But Kit, what do you make of the idea that the mayor is calling on the elders to try to calm down the young people?
Again, for me, the mayor didn't call on the elders. Myra Brown from Spiritus Christi called on the elders, and that's why the call was responded to, because of the tremendous work that Myra's done in this community for years and needs to, should be honored for, just like so many other remarkable Black leaders. What I would like is that the city, that people put aside their political careers in there and do immediately what the protesters are asking for. There have been already indications that people from like white militia and other have tried to come into the city and do harm. Despite the strategic nonviolence of the protesters and the Free the People Rock organizers, who, as you know, has been already said, have been remarkable. I mean, my jaw has dropped as a student of nonviolence and how they're doing what they're doing in terms of their strategic nonviolence approach. It's remarkable. But I think that something bad could easily happen, especially from people coming in from outside. We've seen this in other places. So I think right now, you know, the police and mayor should be like quickly moving to resolve. I don't think we should let this drag on. I think it's a powder keg that could happen no matter how hard Free the People Rock work. And even if the RPD, you know, does their what they should have been doing all the way through is standing down. If anything were to happen here, it would be on their heads.
Well, and for listeners who have emailed me saying, well, what about a firework going off? What about people throwing bottles? On the rare times that has happened, if you watch the group, the protest movement, the people in that movement, they respond quickly to say, don't do that. You know, largely that is stopped. Go ahead, Marlo. It sounds
but Evans, yeah. Evans, but see, here's the issue. There was no fire. I was there Saturday night. At least that was the part that I saw. There was no firecracker thrown. It was until after the attack occurred.
To be fair to Reverend Washington's point, I'm not sort of litigating the timeline of events here.
No, I know.
But just making the point that because I've gotten plenty of emails from people saying, well, you know, the protesters did X or they did Y. I mean, we've talked about thousands of people over the last 6 nights, and the desire is not to see escalation on the side of the protesters, and wondering often why they're receiving escalation. I mean, again, that is me trying to describe the events as we have seen them. And before we go, I have to ask Melanie Funches. I have to ask you, when we think about Daniel Prude's death and the fact that his brother tried to get mental health help for him, some people are looking at that saying, see, we're already overloaded. I mean, that's not the way to go. They can't handle the cases as it is. My understanding, Melanie, is that part of the call to reroute some of the funding for response is acknowledging that a system is already overburdened and needs a lot more support. How do you see mental health as a component for what's going to happen next here?
Well, in the case of emergency response, we need to see Free the People Rock is calling for the enaction of Daniel's Law, a law that says that there is a separate and apart from law enforcement response to emergency mental health calls by trained mental health professionals and trained people. Because what we need to understand is that many times law enforcement just simply being in the area can escalate the situation. And so we need to have, and you don't call a plumber to do your hair. You don't call a mechanic, you know, to do your pedicure. Why are you calling law enforcement for something that is a mental health professional's job? So my thing is, we need a different sort of response. And we need, this is when we're talking about reallocation of resources. This is the way we can reallocate some resources to offer just not just compassionate, but good therapeutic care to the people who need it at the time they need it in the doses. That we need to create a precision of fit between the challenge that is presented to us and the response to said challenge. But now this is presented us with a whole new challenge, with the challenge of community-based trauma that has been done now that we must address.
talking to Melanie Funchess, who has been joining us this hour from her capacity, both as a member of the Greater Rochester Black Agenda Group and also the Director of Community Engagement at the Mental Health Association of Rochester. And the question of what funding and resources go toward mental health response, how that looks in the future, if there is the kind of change that has been called for, it's going to be a very complex piece, and we always appreciate Melanie's views on this. Melanie, thanks for making time for the program today, and I know we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Evan.
Kit Miller is the director of the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. And someday, Kit, I just want to talk to you separate about how you see nonviolence and the role of nonviolence in such difficult and seemingly intractable change. I mean, you touched on it today, but I'm always grateful for the conversation, and thanks for making time with us this hour.
I want people to register for nonviolencenews.org. They can learn about it every week.
Nonviolencenews.org, you say?
Yep.
There you go. Thank you, Kip. Reverend Marlo Washington, pastor at Seneca United Methodist Church. Haven't seen you in a while. That's what the pandemic does, but it's nice to hear your voice. Thank you, Reverend.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice. Thank you.
Thanks for making time for the program. And our thanks to everyone who participated today. We're going to have a lot more to say on this. I mean, you're going to have a lot more to say, I should say. And you'll have that opportunity all week long here. We're going to talk to members of City Council tomorrow on this program at noon. Until then, Rob Braden is the engineer and Megan Mack is the nonstop working producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.